CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Today, we're going to talk about Trump's dire financial situation ahead of this week's fraud deadline. And I interview Congressman Jared Moskowitz about his challenge to Jim Jordan and James Comer, the likelihood of foreign aid passing Congress, and his tour with the vice president of his old high school, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, in Parkland, Florida. I'm Brian Tyler Cohen, and you're listening to No Lie. Okay, so we are now on the cusp of the deadline for Trump's massive $455 million payment or bond in the New York fraud trial. So here's what we can expect. The most likely option, in my opinion, is that he can't come up with the money, in which case Letitia James, the New York Attorney General, will begin the process of seizing his assets to satisfy his judgment that way. Already, she started the process of preparing to seize at least one property that he owns, and that's called Seven Springs. It's described, according to the Daily Beast, as a Bruce Wayne-like mansion surrounded by 212 acres of dense woods and rolling hills, which I'm sure is the perfect complement to his very understated gold toilets. She filed the judgment in Westchester County, New York, a couple of weeks ago, which means she now effectively has a lien in place in the event that Trump tries to sell the place or otherwise shift his assets to avoid having them seized. And so if the value of Seven Springs doesn't satisfy the full amount that he owes, she'll keep seizing his properties until New York is made whole, which means we may very well see Trump Tower turn into a Spirit Halloween in time for October. There is another option, one that I'm actually increasingly worried about. That Donald Trump finds the money from a foreign government or a foreign entity. Here's what Trump's lawyer, Alina Habba, said when she was asked about this possibility directly.
Is there any effort on the part of your team to secure this money through another country, Saudi Arabia or Russia, as Joy Behar seems to think?
Well, there's rules and regulations that are public. I can't speak about strategy that require certain things, and we have to follow those rules, like I said.
Not a no. I feel like it would have been pretty easy to refute it if they weren't seeking funds from a foreign entity. So that poses a pretty serious issue. Let's say it's Saudi Arabia or Russia. Bailing him out now means that in the event that Donald Trump becomes the next president, those countries own a U.S. president. $500 million from some Russian oligarch or some Saudi prince is not a lot of money to be the top creditor to someone who may then become the most powerful person in the world. Meaning that Trump would be working not on behalf of Americans, but on behalf of his creditor who saved his ass and saved his precious buildings. And so our foreign policy, if he becomes president, or our economic policy, would be guided by how beneficial they would be to some other country. And obviously, I don't think I need to explain how dangerous that would be. Another route that he might take could involve Truth Social. And so this one is a little weedsy, but the top line is that Trump Media, which is the parent company of Truth Social, merged with an already public company called Digital World Acquisition Corporation. It's a SPAC company. And so this company is now reportedly worth billions of dollars. So Trump wouldn't be able to sell any stock in the company that he has for 6 months, so he won't be able to be liquid that way. But he may be able to convince a bank or a creditor, including a foreign creditor, to lend him money against that company. Meaning it may actually be possible for Trump to get bailed out, whether it's by a bank or, worse, some foreign broker, who might see this merger as an adequate justification to be able to get in Trump's good graces. All the while, Donald Trump continues to cry foul and present himself as the victim here. He posted on Truth Social the other day that Judge Engoron was committing election interference. Here's the thing. It is not Judge Engoron's fault that Donald Trump made the conscious decision to commit fraud. If Trump isn't happy with the punishment that he was dealt for the crime that he committed, don't commit the crime. Don't defraud the banks. Don't defraud the people of New York. Like, this guy is a clown and a con artist, but he's not dumb. He knew exactly what he was doing when he was offering one number for favorable loan rates and then a whole different number for low tax rates. So, no, none of this is Judge Engoron's fault. None of it is Biden's fault. None of it is the Democrats' fault. It is his fault. And if the guy is running to lead the self-proclaimed party of personal responsibility, he might consider actually taking some. Next up is my interview with Jared Moskowitz.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Now we've got Congressman Jared Moskowitz. Thanks for coming back on.
Thanks for having me.
So you offered a challenge to Jim Jordan and James Comer as far as impeaching Biden was concerned. Here's a clip of that moment.
Look, Chairman, we got like 3.5 minutes here. Let's just do the impeachment. I mean, why continue to waste millions of dollars of the taxpayers' money if we're going to impeach because you believe you've shown he's committed a high crime and misdemeanor? What are you waiting on? Let's just do it. I mean, by the way, we got Chairman Jordan here also, the double chairman. Why aren't you guys calling for the vote in your committee? When is it going to happen? When can we tell the American people you're going to stop wasting their money and just call for the vote on impeachment?
Gentlemen, you?
Sure.
We don't do snap impeachments like you guys. We actually do the facts. We do oversight according to the Constitution.
So you're never going to call for it. You're never going to call for it.
All right. So talk about that moment.
Well, I mean, listen, we're like on the 15th chapter of this book. Okay. We thought like it was going to end, months ago. And I was just like, let's just get to the end. Let's just skip to the end. You want to impeach the president. You tell viewers every day on, Newsmax and other shows that, oh, we're going to impeach the president. They're telling their base they're going to impeach the president. So I was like, let me help you. I'll make the motion to impeach the president. And this is where you second it. And, they froze. Like, it froze. They had nothing deer in the headlights. And I just wanted to show to the American people that they're never going to impeach the president, whether they had the votes in committee or not. We know for sure they don't have the votes in the floor. I mean, they got Republican members that don't want to vote for it. They got Republican members like Ken Buck literally leaving and saying that he ain't staying and the speaker ain't making him stay because he's not voting for an unconstitutional impeachment vote. I think it was quite embarrassing for them. I didn't know exactly how it was going to go, but they fell right for it, of course.
When was the moment that you knew that they had nothing?
So when Jordan and I were going back and forth and he was like, well, we don't do snap impeachments. And I'm like, well, it's been 15 months.
Right? Yeah, I think the snap part of it is definitely long gone. But by that point, now this would be like the longest process it would take to even get an impeachment. Apparently, they don't even do like long drawn out impeachments either.
Right. And then I realized I had him trapped because I was like, well, hold on a second. If you had the high crime and misdemeanor, if you have proven that, you'd call the vote. Right. And he's like, well, we don't rush it. We do our work. And I was like, no, I got it. But that also means you don't have the goods. You don't have the goods. You don't have the evidence. You don't have anything on Joe Biden. Because if you did, you'd call the vote. So we're going to still fish for something that doesn't exist. Okay. And, now they're sending a letter inviting Joe Biden to the hearing. So I just, I'll send a letter inviting Donald Trump to the hearing. This kabuki theater can go on all day long. But yeah. I really wanted to show their voters. Our voters know this. Independents and Democrats know that this isn't going to happen. But I really wanted to show their base that it's theater, it's fake. They're never going to call for the vote.
Right. I mean, if you were the first one willing to call it out and they still won't jump on board, then clearly they're not going to do it. They have no interest in doing it.
How easy can I make it for them?
Right.
I made
a
motion to impeach the president, right?
Yeah.
And they couldn't even second it. Brian, yeah. I mean, on a platter right there for them. And not only could they not second it, they all of a sudden, like they choked on their tongue. They just like looked at me and smiled. There was kind of like a moment like where I think I got a wink and they were like, okay, you got us.
Will this stunt continue? Like, do you think they'll finally get embarrassed enough or is the masochism actually a good thing for guys like James Comer and Jim Jordan who have a humiliation fetish?
I don't know. I mean, look, at some point, maybe Comer and I could be friends, we'll sign like a peace treaty between the two of us. But I mean, he's just, I got to imagine, because I go at the end of the committee, right? I go at the end. I got to imagine, like, he's just sitting there in his chair And he just knows it's a slow tick of 5 hours until it's my turn.
Yeah.
And so, look, you know, he was the one who, you know, wanted to start this nonsense with me. And look, it's okay. I'm just going to be relentless. And he makes it easy. Like, I haven't figured out, like, are we this good or are they just that bad? I haven't figured that out yet.
Yeah, I think the answer to that is just yes. Take us behind the scenes here. Did anyone from the Republican side say anything to you guys after that routing that they got from you, from Jamie Raskin, from Jasmine Crockett, from AOC?
Yeah, I think they thought this was their best hearing, right? And at first I was like, what are they talking about? And then I was like, no, I get that because all of the others have been dumpster fires too.
Yeah.
So, right. So this was a smaller dumpster fire. Maybe that's how they yeah. thought about it. But then I looked how they got panned actually on right wing media, and even right wing media was like, where is this going? Right. Yeah. You know, I think the tactic of calling for the vote and showing the vote was not going to happen, that was too big of a visual, even for their media bubble to now not admit that there's not going to be an impeachment vote. And then Matt Gaetz went on Newsmax last night and said, Jared Moskowitz is right. We don't have the votes for impeachment. Okay, well, now that we have this up out in the open, just close it and save the taxpayers money. And let's get back to doing the things we should be doing, like, you know, keeping government open longer than like a week. Okay. And you know, passing aid to our allies to help stabilize the world and making sure that we can bring down the cost of living in this country. Let's like do that stuff. Well, but, you know, look, what do you want? The 118th Congress, right? Remove the speaker, expelled one of their own members, you know, impeach the cabinet secretary that hadn't happened in 150 years. You know, that's the historic Congress that I serve in, the 118th.
And that's the craziest thing about this. These are the people that rail against government waste. They have done nothing in this Congress except investigate Joe Biden and Hunter Biden and still haven't been able to figure out a crime. But that's it. I mean, they swept in to their House majority on these claims that they're going to lower costs and bring inflation down. They haven't done anything. They couldn't even get their own border bill that a conservative Republican negotiated through the finish line. They have done nothing. They have nothing to show for their party.
In fairness to them, I think you're underestimating their importance and the historic achievement. Okay. They have secured Gestos. They have secured it in this deal that we're going to vote for tomorrow. The big win that they are selling to their own caucus is they have secured everybody's gas stove. And so look, that's an important win for America. You know, it's not tax reform or helping climate change or, you know, helping lower cost of home ownership or
no, but look, I mean, one of the greatest concerns among Americans today is that Joe Biden himself is going to barge through your front door looking to gain ownership of your stove.
Right. He's so tired, old and sleepy. He's coming to take your gas stove.
So, all right, well, let's move over to a more important topic here. And there are two discharge petitions right now in the House for foreign aid. So explain how this process works. And then what is the status on those discharge petitions?
Right. So here's the deal. So we have the Senate bill, right, which if the House, which passed with 70 votes in the Senate, which is, you know, that's a big bipartisan vote.
And that is the foreign aid and the border security.
Correct. Okay. And so if you take that up in the House and we pass it, it will go right to the president's desk, right, which is the fastest way to help our allies in Israel, Ukraine, get humanitarian aid to the Palestinian people and Taiwan, and also replenish our own arms. Let's not pretend 30 billion of that stays right here in country.
Right, that's half of that amount. That there was $60 billion. Half of it was just to replenish our own military.
Correct. With weapons, again, made in America. So job in, you know, helps jobs in this country. So all that money was staying here. So, that would go right to the Senate if that, I'm sorry, that would go right to the president if the House passed it. If we do a discharge petition, right, then it has to go back to the Senate and that process starts all over there. But there are two discharge petitions out there. One is being run by the Democrats, which is the identical bill that the Senate passed. The identical bill the Senate passed, I have signed that discharge petition. The other is being run by Brian Fitzpatrick, which is not totally complete yet because he says he's going to amend it. Because right now, there's no humanitarian aid in there. There's some limited border stuff in there. And he says he's going to amend it. He's going to strengthen the border stuff in there. He wants to do loans, he has said, to Ukraine because he believes that can get more Republican votes. By the way, if the loans are forgivable, I, you know, that might be a distinction without a difference.
Right.
So look, however we can get there, we need to get there. But if we don't take up the Senate bill, understand we start the and we pass something here, which would be a big deal. We're going to still start that process all over there in the Senate. So that doesn't mean we're done. It means we're done with the House. But now the Senate has to decide whether they want to take our bill. And that could take weeks over there.
Yeah.
And Ukraine's running out of time. So at this juncture, we leave tomorrow for 2 weeks. So we are nowhere. Speaker Johnson has played politics with this. He has caved to Donald Trump. He didn't get Israel the aid they needed in his first week in office when he played politics by trying to do offsets with it. And so, you know, this has been a disappointing process for our allies, Israel and Ukraine, for our other allies who are watching us kind of, you know, fumble around and trying to stand by them. And our enemies are laughing, taking advantage of the process.
Well, which of these is likely to pass? Are either one of them likely to pass? Like, what do we expect to happen here? Have you heard anything from Republicans who may be interested in signing any of these discharge petitions, or Ken Buck, for example, before he leaves?
Yeah, it's unclear. I do think there is some movement on their side of the aisle with this loan idea. I think that's getting traction. Why is that getting traction? Because that idea came from Donald Trump,
right?
About doing loan to Ukraine. So of course that's getting traction here now. By the way, they're pretending like that's a unique idea. That's actually how China does their foreign policy. They give loans instead of grants. Okay, go around the world. You can talk to other countries. No one wants these loans. But you know, look. If we can get the aid to Ukraine, I don't care what we call it. We just got to make sure that we get that money over there so that they can have the weapons they need to fight off the invasion from Vladimir Putin so he doesn't then continue to go to NATO countries.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
You know, Mike Johnson has expressed openness to Ukraine aid in the past, and also his rhetoric suggests that he supports Ukraine right now, and yet he is unilaterally responsible for holding it up. So how do you explain the disconnect here?
Motion to vacate. That's it. Motion to vacate. Three words. Motion to vacate. That is controlling this entire process. If a couple members, you know, threaten to make a motion to vacate over Ukraine, he goes and hides and doesn't talk about it. So, you know, he's trying to find, I guess, cover maybe from with Donald Trump on that issue to survive a motion to vacate. That's how I see it. So kind of like in the Senate, where you don't even have to threaten, you know, to do a filibuster anymore. You just have to get 60 votes. Right now, you know, in his mind, you know, he just wakes up every day trying to survive the day. And so, you know, he's got this motion to vacate thing in his mind because it had been threatened in the past. And I think that's really what's guiding his whole view on this.
Yeah, just politics of fear, even extending to the leaders of their own party.
That's right.
We're recording this just prior to your Saturday visit with the vice president to Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. That's where you went to high school. You're leading that tour. So it's been 6 years since the shooting there, and that was one of the most consequential shootings in U.S. history. Can you talk about what's been done since then and whether you think it's working?
Yeah, I mean, it's the largest mass shooting at a high school in American history. And so, look, I've been doing these tours because the building is a time capsule. It's exactly as it was the day of the shooting. They used it as a crime scene in the trials, which is why they kept it that way. So minus the victims, it's all there. The blood's there, the broken glass.
The students never went back to Marjorie Stoneman Douglas?
They never went back into that particular building of the school. It was the freshman building. They built a new building for freshman money. I got in the budget when I was a state rep, $25 million to build a new building. So students never went back in that building, and eventually there'll be a memorial there. But right now it's a time capsule. What was on the desks that day, the essays they were writing, or if their computer was on the desk, what was on the dry erase board, the shoes that fell off, wow, stuff that's scattered. I mean, when I mean it's identical, it is identical to the day of the shooting, minus the victims. And so within the horrors of those walls are a lot of lessons learned, not just on gun violence, but on school safety, on how to train staff within the school because they were failures that day, on responding to a mass shooting because there were failures that day. So there are all sorts of lessons that can be learned, which is why we've been bringing people through the building. As far as how Florida responded, look, I led the effort in the Florida legislature within 3 weeks of the shooting in my hometown at my high school. We passed the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas School Safety Act. We raised the age to buy any gun in the state of Florida to 21, 3-day waiting periods, and red flag laws. We were only like the 6th or 7th state in the country to put red flag laws in at that time. Those red flag laws in the last 6 years have been used 12,000 times. Law enforcement has deemed someone a danger to themselves or a danger to others 12,000 times. Yeah. It's supported by Democratic sheriffs, Republican sheriffs, the Republican Sheriffs Association, and no one even across the aisle is trying to remove that from statute. And when this bill passed, it passed on a bipartisan basis. It passed with Republican votes. It passed with Republicans who were A-plus rated members of the NRA, signed into law by Rick Scott. Hundreds of millions of dollars for school safety, hundreds of millions of dollars for mental health. And they've strengthened that year after year. And so it is working. In the lead up to the shooting at my high school, we had Pulse in Florida, the shooting at Pulse, 49 people died. We had the shooting at the Fort Lauderdale Airport, okay? And then we had Douglas. They were 3 years in a row, those mass shootings. We passed a law, and 6 years later, Florida has not had another mass shooting like that. Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean we're going to prevent all crime, but mitigation works.
Yeah.
We are mitigating what's going on, and yet we are balancing people's constitutional rights. No one's, you know, protesting in the streets that you can't buy a gun in Florida, of all places. It used to be called the Gunshine State. So I've taken a lot of those lessons learned, how to work across the aisle, what you can get past, right? We didn't ban assault weapons there, but we did raise the age to 21. We did institute waiting periods. We did institute red flag laws, right? And so there are things we can do up here, right? While we try to, you know, work on the North Star banning assault weapons, red flag laws, I really think it is the way to go. And so the vice president is going to go through the building. I am grateful that she is coming. The families are going to take her through, the parents, the spouses. They're going to, you know, tell the stories of their sons, their daughters, their husbands, where they died, how they died. It's very emotional. It's going to be like nothing else she's ever done. It's going to be very impactful. And she's bringing the Office of Gun Violence Prevention. This is their first deployment since the president created that office, which we're grateful for him doing.
Well, to that point, what's your message to red state governors and legislators whose solution to these shootings is actually to relax gun laws with solutions like constitutional carry, for example?
It's a mistake. Florida is the model. Red state Florida, Ron DeSantis Florida, Rick Scott Florida, Donald Trump Florida. The entire legislature is controlled by Republicans, the House, the Senate. The whole cabinet's controlled by Republicans. Okay. The majority of Republicans voted for this bill. Okay. And they all got reelected. Not only did they get reelected, a lot of them got promoted. Some of them became the speaker. Some of them became Senate president. Some of them became the education commissioner. One of them became an ambassador in the Trump administration. Another became president of a school. I mean, just on and on, right? They got promoted. And so, you know, Florida showed that you can balance it. You can protect people's Second Amendment rights, but also pass common sense gun violence prevention, mental health, school safety to help keep kids safe in school and in their neighborhood.
Well, Congressman, you know, you and I have spoken off camera about all the work you've done to bolster gun violence prevention. So thank you for being a champion for this issue. Good luck on this tour this weekend. And I appreciate you taking the time today.
No, thanks for having me, Brian. Appreciate it.
Thanks again to Congressman Moskowitz. That's it for this episode. Talk to you next week. You've been listening to No Lie with Brian Tyler Cohen. Produced by Sam Graber, music by Wellesley, and interviews edited for YouTube by Nicholas Nicotera. If you want to support the show, please subscribe on your preferred podcast app and leave a 5-star rating and a review. And as always, you can find me at Brian Tyler Cohen on all of my other channels, or you can go to briantylercohen.com to learn more.